turning and turning in the widening gyre. The falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world, the blood-dimmed tide everywhere. The ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are filled with passionate intensity. These are the words of William Butler Yeats in his poem, The Second Coming. The ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. What could be more innocent than an evening out with friends at a concert hall, the Bataclan? Halfway through the performance, explosions ring out, people begin to fall, and everything falls apart in an instant. What could be more innocent than shopping at a suburban marketplace outside of Beirut, when suddenly the blood-dimmed tide is loosed everywhere? In each instant, whether in Lebanon or in Paris or in any number of places all around the world, on Saturday, Friday, Thursday, or any day, our illusions about safety and security are shattered. We are living in an apocalyptic age and an apocalyptic place where violence is let loose upon the earth and the worst are filled with passionate intensity. Everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned out and we are shaken from our comfort. But that is not the whole story. Thankfully, it's not the whole story. It's not even half the truth, because we are also living in a time of possibility. We're living in a moment when we can recommit ourselves to the work of creating resilient communities, beloved communities, sites of healing and of growth. Wars will not end, but our desire to seek peace in our world, in our nations, in our cities, in our neighborhoods, in our homes, and even in our own hearts should not end. Back in October, when I was thinking about a title for this service, War Without End, I thought that it would actually be a clever play on words. Words taken from a Christian doxological formulation, doxology, a song of praise. And that phrase is world without end. World without end. It's a triumphal punctuation on a statement that leads us to understand that there will come a point in time when the Christians will be victorious, ushering in a theocracy, a world without end, offering peace without end. I thought it would be a play on those words, and also a play on our own history as a country, the United States, a country for whom 239 years of our history, 222 of those years have been spent at war. That's 93% of our history as a nation spent at war. Of course, this is a world with war without end. And this says nothing about the entire history of humankind on this planet. Peace is something that couldn't be more alien to us. but it's something that we need so desperately. So desperately. And it has to be something that begins with ourselves, with a conversion of the heart. It also has to be something that begins with a change in how we respond to acts of violence. So we heard on the television the French president, François Hollande, say in so many words that we are going to respond with the utmost vengeance, with the swiftest vengeance. We heard our own president echo those words. The entire Western world is going to raise itself up and descend upon the Middle East to mete out this vengeance on the group we know as ISIS. And that is exactly what ISIS wants. And here's why. They, like the fanaticism that inspires Christian triumphalism in a world without end, is the same fanaticism that motivates Islamic fundamentalism of a world without end. This idea of the Western world descending on the Middle East with its armies feeds into Quranic prophecies about the end of the world, the apocalypse. It's a way of speeding things up. If we can get all the right players in the right place at the right time, poof, the end of the world. Poof, apocalypse, the return of the prophet. And this should be absolutely terrifying to everyone. That is not a world we want to live in. We don't want to live in a world of Christian triumphalism or Muslim triumphalism or Judaic triumphalism, or any. We want to live in a world where all people can be at peace and not one subjugating the other. Not a world of winners and losers. So we have to rail against this. We have to respond in ways that perhaps we haven't dreamed of before now, by creating communities that are able to resist and communities that are resilient in the face of conflict and ongoing violence. It's an enormous task that we have before us, but I believe that we are up to it. And we should not let these acts of terror motivate us to act in ways that defeat our own self-interest and that serve the ends of religious fanatics. We must do better. And one way that we can do better is by creating these communities where we can hear from each other. And there is a group that we desperately need to hear from, a group who might offer us a way forward. And it's a group that I've actually had a long affinity for and with. These are veterans. There's always been something attractive to me about veterans. And I think that is because I recognize in their experience something of my own experience. I see in their wandering souls glimpses and reflections of my own wandering soul trying to find a place called home. Home has always been a complicated place for me. A place where I'm not sure that I could go back to for various reasons, none worth mentioning now, but an experience very similar to veterans who are often far away from home long after they've returned from conflict. In the wandering spirits of veterans, I hope that we might also find our own stories. Back when I was in seminary, my final project had to do with creating a service of reintegration called Partners in Healing. And it was an opportunity for those who are coming back from war, specifically the Iraq and Afghanistan wars that are ongoing, to experience something like a homecoming, a place where people can hear from them, patiently learning their stories, difficult stories, increasing our capacity to hear, and more important than that, through our actions, through occupying the same space at the same time, showing that we are inextricably linked in a web of life. Now, as I mentioned, we've spent most of our time as a country at war. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but we are actually still at war right now, not just in Iraq and Afghanistan, but Yemen, Syria, Ukraine, and Somalia, and places that we haven't heard of yet. So the veterans that I am speaking of are veterans of those wars too, and wars in our country's past. These people are among us, and we see them. We see them sometimes as homeless persons on the street, in the drug rehabilitation programs. We might hear of their stories on the newspapers, stories of people overcome by grief, who lose their lives to suicide. And we also see them and not recognize them, as the women and men we pass who hold on to invisible wounds and difficult stories, hidden scars, burdened alone with the memory of war. My interest in veterans has to do with the fact that war impacts all of us. But we live in a society today that would allow us the comfort of denying that, of pretending that it doesn't exist until it explodes on television before our eyes or we read about it in the newspapers. But this ongoing conflict, this war without end, injures all of us. The Unitarian Universalist writers Rita Nakashima Brock and Gabriella Latini described this injury as a moral injury, an injury that requires healing for all of us. In their book, Soul Repair, they describe this moral injury as coming from the fact that war exposes us to the lowest levels of humanity, to no humanity, to the ideas of kill or be killed, to the reality of seeing our friends and comrades disappear before our eyes in a cloud of smoke, fire, and ash, to the idea that the world is not a reliable place that we can trust and depend in, a world filled with anguish. This is what war does, and that is how we are all injured morally by it. War hurts the soul. But we come to places like this to heal the soul. And we do this when we hear from each other, allow ourselves to be open to the experience of others, the experience of veterans. We do this by raising our awareness, by seeking out the information that is often denied to us, to speak out against the wars that are ongoing in our name, and more importantly, by accepting the responsibility that we all play in perpetuating those wars through the actions of our elected officials. Brock and Latini, the UU writers, they say that we cannot turn back the clock to pre-war times. Those times don't exist. We cannot bring back the dead. We cannot undo atrocities. And we cannot undo environmental destruction. But what we can do is we can hear from each other. We can make room for each other with patience, kindness, and an open heart. We can learn to listen to what might be very difficult experiences, very difficult stories, worlds that we just cannot understand, worlds that exist on the battlefield. We can listen without judgment, being patient with the silence, leaning into the confusion, the grief, and often the shame that accompanies those experiences. There might be veterans here today, and I want you to know whether you've come back last week or 50 years ago today, that you are not on your journey alone. You do not bear the burden of moral injury alone. We are moving together, however slowly, to undo the wrongs of war that you've done in our name by our elected government. That we are moving towards greater honesty of our collective culpability. And more importantly, we as a community are recommitting ourselves to being in right relationship, restoring humanity to veterans and civilians alike. Because we can only go home if we go home together. The experience of veterans are our own experiences. And the skills that we need to learn are actually quite easy and right before us. Just this weekend, yesterday, I had the privilege of participating in a program sponsored by the Adult Spiritual Development that was brought to us by Rick Rhodes. And the leader of the program presented a model that is called community resilience. Community resilience. And my hope is that we can all work towards becoming a community that is resilient. And here's what that means. It means that we are developing the capacity to hear from each other very deeply, without judgment. That we are aware of ourselves and aware of the people around us. That we are able to look past the violence, past the destruction, and for our lives, look past the war, to see a different way of being. It's a system where we are grounded, where we recognize that we stand on the earth and that we can draw strength from the earth. And I don't mean that in some mystical, spiritual way. I mean actually recognizing that we stand on solid ground and that we draw strength in so many ways from sources beyond ourselves. And those sources often are the people who we are in community with. And more importantly, this model encourages us to celebrate and to bring on new and more beautiful rituals that remind us of our deep connections to each other and to this world that we share, so that no one is ever made to feel separate or alone, whether they be veterans or civilians, Americans, or from countries all around the world. How beautiful is it that we are sitting in this sanctuary that is decorated in all of these beautiful flags? Flags that represent all of the countries that celebrate Diwali, the Hindu festival of lights. But there's a sad story in each and every one of these flags. Many of these countries represent former English colonies, where northern Indians were transported as indentured servants after the British ended the slave trade in the 1830s. But how beautiful is it that we are able to rewrite the story, to turn that initial story of destruction and violence and war into a new tale of celebration that brings people together in a way that wouldn't have been possible before. It is up to all of us to rewrite the story and to create places where those stories can be told. And those are communities of resilience. That is what we are in the process of creating. That is what we ought to create if we want to experience a world with peace. A world where nations and cities and neighbors and the home and the heart is at peace, is a world where we can tell and hear stories from each other, where we can embrace and recognize our very deep connections to one another. It's a world where we can even celebrate in the face of despair and violence. So perhaps we can't hope for a world without war, or even a year without war. That may not be possible. But what we can hope for, what we can work every day to sustain, the place that we can come to after tragedy is this one, a community of resilience, where hope and growth are part of the order of service, a place where we are building beloved community. We've seen glimpses of those communities. There are places where we courageously and lovingly challenge each other, where we do the good and necessary work of expressing gratitude and forgiveness. These are communities where, more importantly, we learn to share our stories, to listen with compassion, to confess our wrongs, and to work towards an ongoing partnership for healing. May it be so, and amen.